I'm Miranda Worthen. I'm a professor at San Jose State University and an epidemiologist.
I'm Carla McClellan. I'm Creek and Cherokee and Irish and a public health consultant.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Hartley. I'm a tribal member of Stockbridge Munsee Mohican Nation in Wisconsin. And I work at Native American Health Center in Oakland and worked on this project.
So we also have no financial relationships to disclose. So I just want to sort of orient you to what we're going to talk about today. First, we're going to introduce you to the Bay Area Native community a little bit, and then we'll talk about the inspiration for the project we're presenting and what our preliminary findings are.
Okay, so we just wanted to, like Miranda said, give at least a general orientation to our community, the Bay Area American Indian population. And I know that for those that might not be familiar, the question we get all the time is we didn't realize that there were Native people in Oakland. So we'll just start there to clear that up. So about 70% of California Indians, American Indians, live in urban areas. So the San Francisco Bay Area is a large home to many Native peoples. There are the lands that we live on in the Bay Area are traditionally Ohlone Nation lands. But in addition, there's many different California Indian tribes, but also a particular scenario that we have in the Bay Area is that Oakland itself was a relocation site during the 1950s federal government relocation program. So it was a program designed to provide economic opportunities, job experience in a city. So a lot of people from all across the country came out to Oakland as a relocation center. And so our community now is made up of generations that have followed. And so I think that it wasn't expected that the community would maybe stay as cohesive as it has. I think that it was a little bit more of an assimilationist-oriented policy, but that hasn't happened. The community has really intermarried. There's been generations of a multi-tribal, thriving, resilient, urban Indian community. So that's the community that we're focusing on. And so there's a lot of strong social networks and ties in our community, but there are also a lot of significant health disparities. And so from a behavioral health and wellness perspective, there's, daily experience of oppression, a lack of, at times, some of identity loss, or nowhere to practice a lot of your cultural traditions. And so this experience can be something that's especially vulnerable with our youth. The picture, by the way, is a community member who is Pomo, a California Indian Nation, and it's focusing on a mural project that we recently completed outside of our building. This is where we work at Native American Health Center, and this is their original site. So just to give you a visual of where in the world that we're talking about right now is Oakland, a very urban setting in a neighborhood called Fruitvale. And our organization started in the early 70s, and it came as a direct result of the relocation program that I just described, that out of everything that happened through that program, again, the community stuck together, and that there were a lot of needs identified, including obviously health needs. And so with a lot of Indian organizing, people getting together, speaking up for this need to have culturally relevant services, the community was able to form the Native American Health Center. So we're really proud of that there's a Native American Health Center on both sides of the San Francisco Bay, in San Francisco and in Oakland. So we're a federally qualified health center, and we do focus on the Native community, but as it's evolved, we are open to everyone. And the Native American Health Center offers clinical services. We have medical and dental alongside community wellness services such as counseling and cultural activities and a youth department. And so it's that whole area of services that we provide that we're sharing about today for our suicide prevention work.
So as part of the Community Wellness Department, there are multiple grant-funded programs, and one of the programs is the Native Youth Wellness Initiative, and this is a Garrett Lee Smith funded program that's focused on suicide prevention. And the main aim of this program, it's a three-year program, and it's to bring awareness, outreach messaging throughout California, also strengthen referral networks for persons who might be experiencing suicidal ideation or have a history of suicide in their family. And so that was basically what the program started as. And there was this push. What we were realizing is that we were actually lacking knowledge in past suicide experiences in the Bay Area. So we found this push to kind of seek out that experience, so we kind of knew what we were working with. And this is where we actually brought on Miranda, and she's going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was brought on as an external evaluator for this project, and I didn't know much, honestly, about suicide in the Native American community before that. My background was in participatory action research, and I think the Native American Health Center found that appealing, and I was interested in helping this group, and so we sort of started working together. But my first question was, what is your experience of suicide? This grant says you're going to increase referrals, so how many people actually come in and don't get referred and then go on to attempt suicide? And, you know, no one had those kinds of answers. So I started thinking, okay, well, let's go to the data. So fortunately, there are handy publications like this with facts about Native American suicide risk. And from things like this, you see that suicide risk is much higher among Native American youth than any other youth, and that the rates have been increasing, which is a problem. However, it also became clear that, especially in California, but I'm sure across the country, misclassification of Native peoples was massive. And the people most likely to be misclassified were Native American youth living in urban areas. So my sense was basically, this is totally useless for our community. So then what do we do? And what we found in our meetings was, I would say something like, well, how many people have attempted? And people in the meeting would start saying, well, there was, you know, so-and-so a year ago, and, oh, yeah, his brother, and, you know, and they know the stories. So, like as is the case in most places, the people who actually are living in the community hold that knowledge, and the attempt that I then made was to gather that knowledge somewhat systematically so that we could actually have our own data to try to address this problem and identify where the gaps were. And so I developed this project with my colleagues, and we decided to start very simply, just doing semi-structured, in-depth interviews with the staff of the Native American Health Center, which, though there are non-Native staff as well, there are a lot of the organization draws from the community. So these are people with not just connections as professionals, but also connections, personal connections to the community. And so they seem the logical people to start talking with about these issues. So we just started very openly asking about how many people have committed suicide in the past several years. Have these individuals received services at the health center? Were they given referrals to the community wellness department in particular? And what were the characteristics or risk factors of those community members who attempted or completed suicide?
So these were some of our preliminary findings. I'll give you a minute to look over these. So as you can see, there's a tremendous diversity in these experiences that were described in the interviews. And I just wanted to take a minute and explain, you know, some of the stories. So we would hear about, like, a youth who was actively involved in our cultural programming at NHC, or then we would hear about somebody who might have been middle-aged and had come to NHC once and then had gone back to the reservation, and somebody who might be two-spirit with complex addiction, or somebody who is a heterosexual teenager going through a breakup, or, you know, just tremendous diversity in these stories. Some might have received counseling, others might have received referrals. Some of these were completions, some of these were attempts. So we were just realizing that, you know, it's just not, you know, the norm, quote-unquote. We've just got this diverse experience in our community. And even in the different settings, whether they were juvenile justice or school settings or just from the youth services department at NAHC. So, like I said, these were, you know, some of the numbers, but what was actually leaping off the page was something completely different. And then we came to find something else that we didn't even expect when we set out to do these interviews. And what that is actually the conceptions of suicide.
So in speaking especially with our elders in the community, we came to realize that suicide in our community meant something different from what SAMHSA, our funder, or the white dominant community was identifying as suicide. So this quote is from one of our elders, and I thought I'd read it because it actually captures very beautifully what many said. Suicide in the Native American perspective doesn't always mean that you're killing yourself physically. From a Native perspective, suicide is a long-range plan. The destructive behavior that causes from depression, isolation, loneliness, sad soul. Suicide is the way you walk your life. A person that goes out there and habitually drinks alcohol all the time, from a Native American perspective, you are committing suicide. You are killing yourself slowly. You are doing it already, and the people are watching you and ignoring you killing yourself every day. That's suicide for a Native American community. And what I found was that this attitude calls into question our approach. Suicide deaths in this light cannot be distinguished, actually, from deaths from preventable accidents, such as deaths due to drunk driving or drug overdose. What gets classified as suicide represents the tip of the iceberg, with the community experiencing so much pain and suffering. Within white-dominant cultures, suicide is seen as the result of an individual's problem. Within this framework, we acknowledge that suffering within our community results in many things, death by suicide being one result, accidental deaths attributable to behaviors like drinking while driving is another result, and death by homicide because of gang-related involvement is yet another result of the same suffering. There are all the people, then, who don't die and others who struggle. And so what we decided was that interventions that we develop should not just focus on that tip of the iceberg, but on the whole community that gives rise to that suicide.
Okay, so some of the other things that we heard in addition to that major finding about the different conception of suicide, we did hear some recommendations. We did want to share some of those. Some of the main ones were around, like Miranda said, you know, looking at a deeper, larger issues here and how all kinds of behavioral health and wellness issues that we face are interrelated, and so how the major takeaway continues to be what we're already doing, basically, and expanding on it, that we need to keep creating this space in this urban setting for culture. You know, we need to be able to continue to expand on our cultural and our traditional services, and that's what's really working, and that's the strength of the community. So, for example, one of the quotes that we heard so just the way that the Native community is, we do a lot of adopting. In the olden days, it was more of a formal ceremony. When someone has lost parents or siblings, there was always an adoption ceremony to replace your social network. One of the strengths of the community is that we do that out here. And I can really speak to that. In an urban, multi-tribal setting, we're always, everyone's adopting each other. I've been adopted many times over by different aunties just because I don't have my immediate family from my tribe in Wisconsin, out in the Bay Area. So I've always, people adopt you, they take you in, include you in their different family gatherings and ceremonies. So that's a strength that we have, and any way that the Native American Health Center, in this case, can continue to facilitate those types of interactions has been seen as something positive, and in this case, suicide preventative. Which tribal language or background of the ceremonies or cultural events or classes that we have isn't important. It's just important that we have them, and that's something that we kept hearing, that it gives the community strength. And internally, and just looking at our operations as Native American Health Center, something that we heard is that we need to keep strengthening the traditional component of our what we call a holistic system of care, the kind of model that we follow. So we heard different examples of how we could do that. We heard that an example that we need to keep trying to be more of a leader in this. It's not only us. There's a lot of other urban Indian clinics across the country that we heard the recommendation that we should, for example, better incorporate the Native American Religious Freedom Act which is federal law, integrate it better into our policies so that we have a more integrated policy that really honors that Religious Freedom Act in a real way. For example, a lot of the staff that we interviewed said that, you know, I'm afraid about taking time off if I see a community member who's hurting, and if I need to take them to see a medicine person or to a sweat lodge ceremony, I'm afraid that I don't really know, should I take paid time off for that or flex time? You know, how do I do that? And so it's, you know, it shouldn't come down to some kind of administrative issue like that. So it should be, staff should be flexible and able to form a circle of support around somebody who they can see is hurting. We also heard about ways that our community, you know, not being that visible in the urban setting. So we did hear recommendations around how the health center could be more of an advocate in the larger community with the voice that we have with other social service systems that affect our community. So, for example, juvenile justice systems or education system, you know, other players that we can interact with more than we already do, and to continue to advocate to them so that they know we exist, they know there's an urban native population, that we heard that would help. But definitely what we didn't hear, you know, is that there's some kind of, we need more screening tools, or we need more trainings on how to look for warning signs, that those kind of things that we kept hearing from, in this case, the SAMHSA, the federal funder, that's not what we heard. So it doesn't match our reality. And what we did hear, like I said, is how much we need the space for culture in our community.
So just where we're at now, obviously this is somewhat preliminary still. We only did 10 interviews. We're still keeping on going with these conversations, both with people within the Native American Health Center staff, but also with other community members. There is a community council that we are talking with as well about how these resonate. We're having dialogues with other Native-serving agencies in the Bay Area to see what their experiences are, and also, as Bonnie was describing, increase those synergies and those connections in order to create a more holistic experience for our community. And we're also developing some action research to create community solutions for community problems. One of the things that was really clear is that these individual solutions, counseling may be important for individuals, but it's not going to help if you have 10 family members being threatened by a gang and you are living in a place where you're afraid of being shot. So there are things that need the whole community and the community engaged together collaboratively to actually change the reality of people's experiences. And actually, this presentation is part of our preliminary work in that we would really love to hear from you and whether these findings resonate with your community and how you've created interventions that have been successful or that haven't worked, so we can learn from you. So obviously, we'll do that in the broader question-answer session, but also you can find any of us and talk to us individually after this session if you have ideas. So thank you very much.